Now here's a highlight from Coast to Coast AM on iHeartRadio.
And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you. I'm going to introduce you to a paranormal investigator, Steve Gonsalves. His television show is called Ghost Nation on the Travel Channel. He's a former police officer, has been a public speaker and educator about the paranormal for more than 15 to 18 years. He helped pave the way for a worldwide paranormal explosion. He was one of the main cast members on the sci-fi hit television series Ghost Hunters. And then there were spin-offs, Ghost Hunters Live, Ghost Hunters Academy. He started his work in a paranormal studies at a very young age, is well-educated in the field, has investigated more than 1,000 reported haunted locations, had the privilege of working very closely with the famed investigator and paranormal pioneer Dr. William G. Roll, the poltergeist fame, at the Rhine Research Center. Steve, welcome to the program, and thank you for serving. We really appreciate that.
Thanks, George. It's quite nice of you. It's a pleasure to talk to you. Thanks for having me.
What is it that got a former police officer involved in the paranormal?
It was based on interest, really. Interest sort of stemming from some fear. I was very young, not supposed to be watching movies like I was watching, but I remember a movie, The Entity, was on television and scared me. You know, I remember crying and being quite upset, and my mom coming in the room and, of course, wondering why I was watching such, you know, how it got on the television. And she calmed me down, you know, based on all make believe and don't worry about anything. But then I saw, based on true events, and quickly realized that there was more to it than she was telling me. So I'd say by the age of 12 or 13, I was already on, you know, the path of reading books by Dr. You know, William G. Roll and Lloyd Auerbach, and of course, all of Hans Holzer and everybody that I look up to as in the field.
How did the evolution of TAPS and Ghost Hunters evolve for you?
I met up with Jason, who founded the team TAPS, in the 90s, actually. My interest started me on a path where I was following Ed and Lorraine Warren quite a bit, going to their lectures and their studies. Yeah, and I actually had the fortune to work for Ed and Lorraine on a few cases in my early teenage years, and that's when I met their nephew, John Zaffis. And fast forward now, maybe 10 years or so, I want to say, maybe. Now I have my own team, and I see TAPS. This actually was called at the time Rhode Island Paranormal, and Jason, and reached out to him. I'll shorten the story. We became pretty close in terms of just talking. We decided to join forces. And then another gentleman named Grant came along and said, "Hey, you guys need a website revamp." And he offered to do that for us. And he revamped the website, and we called ourselves TAPS at that point, the Atlantic Paranormal Society. And then maybe 5 or 6 years later, we were very, very obviously lucky to get involved in the TV world.
And a great TV shows you've performed in, Steve. I mean, they've been exciting, and I think they've helped what we do in the paranormal field tremendously because they brought more people into the mix.
Thank you. Yeah. When our show first started, the field was a little bit different in terms of, you know, boots on the ground, the field. It was very difficult to get people to take what you were saying seriously. You were sort of looked at a little funny if I told people I was a paranormal investigator. It didn't go as it did today. You're sort of that, if you tell somebody that today, they're very much, "Oh, tell me more. I have a ghost in my house. I know somebody who," where, you know, 15 years ago, you really couldn't tell people that. And when we first got our show, that was one of our big problems. We actually said no for about 2 years for doing, you know, the show Ghost Hunters. And one of the main reasons was, you know, we can't bring anybody, you know, we can't bring a camera crew to anybody's house. It's haunted. They don't want anybody to know. They'll be made fun of and ostracized in the supermarket. So the field has come a long way. And I think we were just fortunate to be the ones, you know, our sort of protocols and procedures disproving hauntings as opposed to just going in believing everything is a ghost, you know, helped people latch on to the show. And I think that is what made it quite a bit of a success. And gosh, that was going back to 2004 now.
Well, in these 1,000 visitations that you've had of haunted houses and places, I'm sure you've seen a lot. But as a former police officer, I bet you had your share of strange things, too.
Yeah, that's true. You know, in a lot of the older literature, not older, but, you know, books from the 80s, 90s, that sort of thing, they would say a lot of ways to get your cases would be to call the police departments and ask them if they have any unexplained phenomena. That, and sometimes that would happen. I remember being young, calling some police departments, and every once in a while you would have one of, you know, someone say, you know what, there is a house where somebody had us come and we couldn't find anything, and maybe we'll pass along their information to you. But there weren't too many strange occurrences where I was. There were some, actually, honestly, some more UFO type of phenomena than ghostly phenomena was reported to the police department I worked at. I did get razzed sometimes, so I'd come in and people would be like, you know, so you haven't written many tickets today. You out in the graveyard or whatever? You know, that razzed me a little bit, but not too many reports came through the police department in that regard.
Has the paranormal world changed since you got involved?
Yeah, quite a bit. We're in a very fortunate place now where, you know, equipment is being made for the purposes of investigating the paranormal. Science is starting to look at it a little bit. For a while, you know, they were sort of, you know, this was very fringe, and it still is. But I've been very fortunate to speak to some physicists who have, you know, told me that they're starting to look at it by measuring the result of it. You know, for instance, say wind, air, you know, they can't really prove it exists. You can't see it. You can't measure it necessarily, but they can see the tree swaying. They can see its result.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they can see what the wind is doing, so they know it exists. So they're starting to study it with looking at, you know, the result, what it does. You know, maybe they can't figure out what made that glass move, but they can measure the movement. They can measure what happened. And that is quite fascinating, because for a long time, you know, science would not look at anything that they couldn't measure, you know, or that they couldn't recreate in a laboratory, or that, you know, you need repeatability, you need controlled environment, and in the paranormal, you don't really have any of that, unfortunately.
What has been one of your most memorable paranormal experiences, Steve?
Ooh, you know, there have been quite a few. Recently on Ghost Nation, this was season one, fantastic. We, you know, as an investigator, you want to try a lot of different things, that because you never know what's going to get a result for you. You really don't. So we try a lot of different things. And there was one circumstance where they had told us that during the Civil War that this room was used as a makeshift field hospital, where they would just tear the front door off of the house and use that as their, you know, surgery table. And you could see the outlines of the pools of blood on the you know, on the floor, really grisly and kind of sad, you know, obviously. The reports where they would hear voices and see an apparition in that room. It would say apparition because they didn't have an established identity. They didn't know who this person was, but they did see an apparition in there. So we were trying different techniques and using some, you know, some data collection equipment, something that we call a trigger object proximity sensor, which measures energy, you know, in its relative distance to an object. And we had that set up connected to a Civil War sword. And we were using this Civil War sword as a trigger object, you know. And then we weren't getting anywhere, so we, you know, put on some garments, some Civil War garments. And using that as a trigger, in essence, you know, a familiarization. Here's something it could be familiar with. Still weren't really getting anywhere. So we added another layer to that, another technique where now we started to put ourselves in the shoes of the people who were living there in the time and the people who owned the house, and they were Masons, or he was.
Uh-huh.
And so now when I come in wearing the Civil War, have the sword, and saying that I need help and that I am a fellow Mason, and you feel, you know, a little, because you're not, you know, being as honest as you could, but you're trying anything to get, you know, an interaction. And it was then when I pretended to be a Mason and that I needed help, and I asked them to grab the sword. You see everything, the proximity sensors now lighting off, which we tested rigorously to make sure it wouldn't just go off. We're hearing voices now and hearing different sounds that wasn't happening before. So it was a culmination of all these techniques and you know, that one piece of equipment that gave us that experience. And I enjoyed it so much that I actually bought the sword. I had to leave with it. I couldn't just let it stay there. And it's here with me in the house. That Civil War sword is with me, and that was awesome. That was a very profound experience, just because you don't often see all of that sort of, not that it's work, you know, we're not laying bricks here, but all of that work come together and pay off in such a solid experience, and I really, really enjoyed that.
Are you now convinced, Steve, beyond a shadow of a doubt, that the other side is the real thing?
I am convinced that there is something else happening that we can't explain. I've never seen a ghost. I've seen things I can't explain. Free-floating masses, you know, in a human shape, that sort of thing. I don't know how to explain that. I believe that I've had definitive communication with something that has a human personality. So I do believe in that. Can I say that I believe with 100% certainty that, you know, there is life after death, and we are going there, and we can come back, or out of some way we end up staying here and retain that personality, and we consider that the other side? I'm not sure that I'm at the point where I believe in that. There is phenomena happening here in our physical world.
So you're a little skeptical.
Yeah, for sure. Absolutely.
That's interesting. How about Jason? Does he have the same feelings?
Yeah, that's a good question, actually. Jay does. You know, he's a little more open to some things, but he has that skeptical mindset, for sure. He's honestly the one who taught me to, you know, really try to disprove things and go that extra, you know, extra little bit of effort and time that you have to really get to the bottom of things, because if you're misinterpreting the experience or what you're seeing, or you're just, you know, exaggerating it, maybe not even on purpose, it's just happening, you're not doing anybody any good. You just aren't. You're not servicing the client. You're not helping the field. The only thing that's happening is you're getting excited for a few seconds, you know.
Right.
So
right.
It really doesn't do any good. And, you know, a skeptic, I think that mindset is valuable. I really do. Now, as you know, a skeptic has an agenda. You know, a skeptic doesn't believe, and they don't want other people to believe either. So they have an agenda there, and that can be a little damaging.
True.
But having that mindset, I think, is very, very valuable.
Well, as long as a skeptic is open, I mean, those are the skeptics I really appreciate, because, you know, they want to prove or disapprove, but their mind is open. It's not no, 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 no before they even start.
That's right. That's right. You know, we're dealing with subjective matter here, obviously, you know, so there is some degree of interpretation and some degree of, you know, whether it's, you know, people are going to believe or not believe. But if you are, you know, really challenging it so tough that you are talking yourself out of the realm of possibility, then you're doing yourself a disservice, I think.
There was a time several years ago, I've always been a believer in life after death, but then there was a stark moment, a very short moment, that I did not believe in that. I had a friend who died in a motorcycle accident, And at the funeral, they had an open casket, which I hate, but I know why they do that. And there he was, Steve, just lying in the casket, looking so stark and empty. And I looked at him, and for a brief moment, it hit me that this was it for him. It's all over. It's done. There's no other place. And I got to tell you, it was the coldest, rottenest feeling I've ever had in my life. And I snapped out of it, you know, 10 minutes later. But for that short time where I believed there was nothing else, it was one of the worst feelings I've ever experienced.
Absolutely. It's a terrible feeling. And I think whenever those feelings surface in anybody, your first reaction is, you got to suppress that. You know, you don't even want to think about that. But the more I personally, the more I dive into the study of what we're doing here, and the older I get and the more I see, the more I tend to believe that, you know, this physical vessel isn't the end of us.
No, there's something here. I mean, taking God out of the equation for a moment, and only for a moment, we're here, and this is a marvelous moment of life that a lot of people can't explain with God taken out of the picture. You know, we've got viruses, we've got happiness, we've got, you know, creativity, we've been to the moon. I mean, those things just don't happen by accident.
No, they don't. There is, I mean, I'm not sure divine intervention, whatever you want to call it, but the more that life is lived, the more you see that, wow, I wouldn't have got to F if A, B, C, D, and E didn't somehow magically line up. And how did all that just happen? You see that, you know, when I was 21, 22, I didn't have enough time in my life to see all those patterns. But I do firmly believe that, you know, when our physical body is done doing what it can do here, we're not over. You know, just about all of science does agree, and spirituality, that energy, you know, isn't ceasing to exist. And even science will tell you that energy can't spontaneously exist. It has to come from a source. So if it came from a source, doesn't it have to go to a source or disperse into some other larger body of matter? I'm not sure, but that feels right to me.
Listen to more Coast to Coast AM every weeknight at 1 a.m. Eastern, and go to coasttocoastam.com for more.